Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we are at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Robert Knott is going to be with us, speaking of the arts. Right now, I'm delighted to welcome Tim Hetherington. He is the co-director, along with Sebastian Junger, of the documentary film Restrepo, which won the Grand Jury Prize for Documentary Film at Sundance, and it will be screening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. And later on in early August, first week of August, it will be opening at the Regal Cinema here in Santa Fe. We are also joined by Captain Dan Kearney, who appears in the film. Tim and Dan will be answering questions after the screening tonight at the Lensic. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
No, thank you for having us.
So the film begins in May of 2007. You're following a platoon that Captain Dan Kearney is in, along with a number of other men. They're entering a very dangerous situation in the Korangal Valley in Afghanistan. Under what circumstances were you there as a journalist with video cameras?
We were there to kind of follow this platoon. Sebastian Junger, my colleague, decided that he wanted to know what the experience of an infantryman was like. And since the war on terror began in 2001, nobody followed the platoon for the entirety of the deployment. And he met Battle Company, the 173rd Airborne, down in Zabor province in 2005. He was really impressed by the guys, and he said, if they ever redeploy, I'm going to go with them. So we both went out, and in 2007, we met Dan in the Korangal Valley.
So what was your mission in the Korangal Valley, Dan?
We were sent down there essentially to take the fight off of the Pest Valley, which was a major thoroughfare going from Asadabad to another larger camp, Camp Blessing, larger population center, and to keep the enemy off of that so that they could develop and bring some additional commerce and government there. And then the secondary mission was to push this road through the Korangal Valley down to Asadabad. And essentially, the way we looked at it is, if you can push a road through there, you're going to be able to bring more commerce, and you're going to be able to bring the government behind it so that the people get access and can touch this. And as is stated in the movie, basically where a road ends in Korangal is where the Taliban begins.
The film is named after one of your soldiers, Juan Restrepo. And I thought, because we get a little bit of a sense of him, just to honor him, can you tell us a little bit about him and what he was like?
Juan was a very outgoing individual. His family's basically from down southern Florida. They came up from Colombia, down in South America. He's very artistic, played the guitar extremely well, and was kind of like the ringleader of the platoon, in essence. In his army role, he kind of took care of the men the same way that he did when he was, outside of his army role, playing the music and taking care of the men that way and keeping them, cheerful and laughter. He was a medic, so he took care of the guys. He always was there. He was always the one that they looked for to kind of take care of them and get them through the problems and kind of lead them through that, a shoulder to lean on, so to speak. And he did that both, when he was being a medic in the Army and when he was outside of that, kind of a character doing both of those.
And so you named an outpost after him, which in turn was the name of the film.
Yeah, we ended up kind of having a struggle with giving it the name Restrepo. The guys weren't too enthusiastic about that initially because it was such a bad place. Didn't really fit his character and what they kind of saw in Restrepo, in Juan. And over time, I think it ended up meaning a little bit more and came to kind of embody what he was all about. It gave him this protection. It gave him this sense of security when they went deeper into the valley and stuff over time. And I think it started to grow on the men later on in the deployment.
I think one of the things that the film does so brilliantly is it gives one a sense of these individual people, these soldiers whom, I mean, as a viewer, you come to love them and to identify with them and to have kind of heart sympathy for them as human beings. And it gives the sense of this daily life during combat, which is some combat and a lot of kind of sitting around and waiting for things to happen.
Yeah, we wanted to make a film that was just the most immersive, experiential war film we could. We felt that there's been a lot of great political reporting about Afghanistan going on. There's a lot of network news pieces, 2 to 3 minute, where the journalist is the center of attention. But there's nothing like the film that we've made. We've made a 90-minute immersive documentary where you, the viewer, essentially go on a deployment. And that involves not just the firefights, but the downtime. We take you right up there. And we felt we had to do that because, you know, the experience of these soldiers really needs to be seen, digested, understood, and in some ways honored as a starting point for a further discussion about the war in this crucial year. You know, and often soldiers are used as symbols, either by the left or by the right. They're used as, the left will say, well, they join the military because they have no economic opportunity. The right say they join it for patriotism. In some ways, it's much more complicated than that. And, you know, as I said, during this important year, you know, we think that this film is, if you want to understand what's happening in Afghanistan, this is the place to start.
We're talking about the film Restrepo, which is opening tonight at the Lenzik here in Santa Fe. It's interesting. We see meetings that you have with Afghan elders, these men, villagers, and you're trying to presumably make positive bonds and also gather information, and you're also limited by the actions of the person who was there before you.
The unfortunate thing is you're always, with the deployments of 12 months, you're always having to take over from somebody else, so they get to make the first impressions. And then you've got to come up behind them and kind of either go forward with that impression, or you've got to change the way that they kind of look at you and your men. And unfortunately, the unit that we followed behind had to build the Korangal outpost and several of the other outposts there, so they had a much more difficult time. They didn't spend too much time connecting with the people. They kind of set the conditions so that we could start doing that. So there was a lot of... There was a lot of perception that had to be changed in the way that we were looking at things and the way that we were doing things in the valley, and it made it very tough for us initially. And the thing that we learned is that with regards to a coin, a counterinsurgency fight, is that it basically moves at the speed of glacial thaw. You got to have patience, and we don't really have that kind of patience.
You know, and I'd add that, winning hearts and minds isn't about, hugging the locals and giving them high fives. Like, it's about offering people a realistic, an offer of security. And, face it, like in 2001 when the American and the NATO went into Afghanistan, not one U.S. Infantryman died in the taking of Kabul. The 90% of Afghans approved with the U.S. intervention. But we know that we turned our focus onto Iraq, and we left 16,000 soldiers in Afghanistan. I mean, there's 40,000 cops in New York City. What kind of message did that send out to the Afghan people? Did it send out a message that we were serious about security? I don't think so. And so, you know, they're there, and they're like, well, if you're not serious about security, then the Taliban's going to cut our heads off if we come over to your side. So at the end of the day, what you see going on in the Korangal is, during the film we made, is a company of soldiers trying to hold something, where resources are stretched, men were stretched because the focus was on Iraq. You know, if this country is serious about bringing counterinsurgents and winning hearts and minds, then it needs to put in the time and it needs to put in the resources. If not, then you're going to have the kind of low-cost kind of counterinsurgency that we saw in the Korangal in 2007.
It's a very difficult situation because, I mean, there you are, soldiers, you're doing things. Inevitably, somebody gets hurt, somebody gets killed, and then there's animosity toward you. We see that in the film. There's animosity over a cow. A cow gets killed. You guys eat it. They want money for it. There's a whole conversation about that. And it was striking to me watching the film how hard it is for these people under these circumstances to actually really get to know each other and form positive bonds, because you're soldiers and they're not.
It's definitely hard. I mean, the thing that you don't see and that you don't read about is that, I mean, we're meeting with the elders or the people of the valley on Thursday, but then on Friday they're going in, they're meeting with the enemy. They're holding their own little meeting / shura, whatever you want to call it. They speak in their own dialect, their own language, so they're able to kind of come back with us after conversing in the meeting with us and tell us what it is that they want after they've kind of been able to go over it. And so it's very hard to connect with them. But the one thing that the Afghans and the people of the Korangal do understand and respect is they come from a warrior religion, a warrior-based society, where I think they appreciate what it is that people are trying to do down there. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And it goes back to exactly what Tim was saying, is they don't know who to ally with. Right now, or when we were there then, I don't think that they really believed that we were going to stay there for very long. And as a matter of fact, they ended up pulling out in April of this year. So those people kind of knew what was coming. They knew that we weren't going to be there for the long haul. So they had to ally themselves with somebody who was going to be able to take care of them and give them that protection, that security, for years on end.
And that's the same with the on the larger picture. I think it said Afghan people, the Korangalis, are suddenly very practical people, and we need to work with the Afghan government, and we've seen at the moment that the Karzai government, there's a big question mark over that. It's like there's a lot of corruption issues going on. There's the question mark over whether the Karzai government is strong enough. And without a strong Afghan government, we're going to find it very difficult to operate in Afghanistan. I think we all know that. The same, we're going to find it difficult, as WikiLeaks pointed out, if the Pakistan intelligence is supporting the Taliban. I mean, it's a predicament.
There was an operation, there's an event, Operation Rock Avalanche, in which more soldiers were injured and killed. I mean, watching this documentary, it made me think so much about what's the difference between a war movie and a war. And here, when you see a war movie, there's focus on blood and guts, because it's a movie, it's a fictionalized movie. When you're watching this, you're so struck by how these are actually real people, and the intensity of it, even though you see much less of the actual combat, and you guys, I think, are very, I guess you would say, restrained in what you do show, it was... rough to watch, I imagine terribly rough to fight, and also to film.
It was, but I think the movie details everything extremely beautifully. They don't show too much of one thing so that it overpowers everything else out there that's going on. It basically captures war at its essence, which is men, brothers fighting side by side for the guy to the left and right, and not for any kind of patriotic values, not for any kind of anything bigger other than just the brotherhood that they've fostered right then and there. And it gets down to that essence. There was days there where we were in like 14 different firefights and all it was fighting. But they get to show some of the lighter aspects that brings these guys together, unlike anything else back in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that what was great about our time in the Korangal was the access that we got given. And, the Restrepo isn't a kind of, a kind of promotion of the military. It's just an honest view of it. I think it shows you the good and it shows you the bad. I mean, on Operation Rock Avalanche, you see what happens when an Apache attack helicopter, hit a house and kills civilian and wounds men, women, and children. At the same time, it shows you what happens when U.S. soldiers are killed. I think if anything, this country needs an open and honest conversation about what is happening in Afghanistan. And, I think that what we provided in the film was just an honest view of that. You see the guys as real people, in the difficulties that they face out there. And we're extremely grateful to Battle Company to allow us in, and for Dan that gave us the trust to let us show those things, because I think the American public needs to see this.
And the biggest thing is that a lot of people think that, Tim and Sebastian and other journalists that come out there are kind of censored. We've got nothing to hide. I mean, some people might be taken back by the fact that they showed innocent civilians being wounded or killed. That came at a cost and a calculated risk that I had to make a decision on, and it far outweighed the lives of my soldiers at that time. And I'm kind of glad that they did show it, because it's a price of war, and it's a price that men have to pay when they're making those kinds of decisions. And it goes to show you, like, what a 27-year-old who's in charge of 200 men gets put through. It goes to show you that, you know, a 19-year-old private who's sitting behind a big machine gun has more to think about other than just, if I pull this trigger, I've got more at the other end of this than just myself.
Yeah, the reality of war is that, as Dan said before, it is this brotherhood. And, you know, we like to think, you know, that it's about how many Apache attack helicopters you have or aircraft carriers. It's not. The heart of the war machine is to take a young group of guys, train them together, put them on the side of a mountain, and they will kill and be killed for each other. And that's the reality that the people back home have to really understand and analyze in order to make sense of the political discussion. I mean, whether you're for or against the war, understanding what motivates young men in war and what you can realistically ask them to do and what you can and cannot ask them to do are important factors whether you're supportive of a war or against the war. You know, these are things you need to understand. And I think our film helps you understand those things.
Well, I mean, I think one of the wounds from Vietnam that has taken a very long time to heal and still is with us is conflating the war and the soldiers. And I think what this film does is it really separates the war and the policy decisions around it. And you can be totally pro-war or totally anti-war and watch this film and love the film and really love the people in it. And that's an important achievement.
And it's also strange because in some ways, you know, there is a dislocation currently between the population here back at home in the States and the war in Afghanistan. And I think in Vietnam, because of the draft, the tentacles of the war reached far deeper into society than they are with the Afghan war. In some ways, what's happening in Afghanistan seems so far away, and we are very divorced from it. And one of the reasons for the film was to bridge that gap.
I have to say, I was watching the film, and it looks like New Mexico. These mountains and the way they are, I felt like if anything's going to bring it home to this part of the country, it's just the visuals of seeing it. You were just saying, Dan, that there was no censorship. Tim, but I wanted to ask you, did you have to agree to any conditions in the shooting or editing of this film to get it made when you were there with the military?
The U.S. military has a very straightforward process for embedding reporters with units. And, you know, first of all, you sign paperwork that's basically to the effect that if I fall out of a helicopter that I can't sue them. You know, later on when we decided we want to make a documentary film, then that changed and we had to sign an agreement with the U.S. Army in California, with the film unit there. And that stipulates that they get a chance to see the cut of the film that we're going to put out there. Not for censoring it, but just because there are a number of articles relating to national security, things like you can't show overheads of bases. And if you also you also have to get permission from soldiers who are wounded to show them. You know, we showed it to the military. There were no problems like that, no issues. And then we put the film out. It's not a case that they can say, well, we don't like that. You can't put that in. It's nothing like that. And I have to say that it was my first time embedded with the U.S. Army. I, as a kind of cynical Brit, I mean, I'm a resident here. I have taxation but no representation. I was thinking that I was going to be censored. And never once was I asked to show material. Never once was I stopped from filming. And, you know, it was a really amazing, interesting experience to be with the unit.
You talk about being in war in terms of brotherhood rather than sort of the larger issues of patriotism and so on. But when you look back on it now, do you feel in retrospect that you contributed toward the defeat of the Taliban in any way?
To give some kind of numbers to it, they pulled out of the Korangal Valley in April, and literally like the next day, the bases on the Pesh Valley were getting hammered. The unit that's just rotated in there has lost 9 soldiers, and the Army is looking at attributing that to the fact that we have pulled out of the Korangal. I feel like we, being in the Korangal, allowed a road to come through the Pesh Valley where there's electricity and there are lights on it, just like any road in the United States. It allowed the government of Afghanistan to move deeper than they were before and get some kind of foundation set. I knew when we were going into the Korangal Valley that I wasn't going to like put up a McDonald's or a Walmart there and be able to like bring about that kind of change, that I was essentially down there fighting a battle here so that they didn't have to fight it, you know, 10 kilometers up the road on the Pesh Valley. And I think that we achieved what it is that we needed to do so that they could set the conditions to do that later on.
What's your perspective, Tim Hetherington?
You know, I think that people have to understand that that the military needs to bring a window of security in which the Afghan government can take responsibility for what's going on, and they can be supported in that task. And creating a window of security means that there's fighting, means that you're going to be, you know, there will be civilian deaths, there will be American army deaths, there will be Taliban deaths. That's what war is. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's like there are important questions this country has to weigh up. We went into Afghanistan following because, you know, because the Taliban supported or allowed Al Qaeda to plan an attack that killed 3,000 people in the U.S. It wasn't founded on a lie like Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin. It happened for a reason. The Al Qaeda and their affiliates are rebased in northern Pakistan on the borders. You know, if you look at since 2001, you know, Al Qaeda and their affiliates have acted as a force multiplier. There have been more attacks since 2001, you know, international attacks of terrorism since prior 2001. The question is, you know, whether is that because we're there or is that because the task hasn't been done yet? I don't know those answers. I'm just a doctor looking at the X-ray.
That is the important question. Is it because we're there, or despite the fact that we're watching the film? I mean, I think really all Americans sort of owe it to. I mean, we're paying for this. I'm paying my taxes that goes to fund this. We need to know what it's about. We need to understand it. And the film, among many other things, gives one the sense of what it's like to be in a place where you're searching people's houses, but you can't read the documents that you find. You don't understand what things mean. You don't understand people's body language. And defeating an insurgency where all of that is understood by everybody but you seems like a task of unbelievable dimensions and possibly futility.
This country just needs to re-engage with what's happening there. I mean, we talk about the financing, and it's like, you know, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq cost this country 1.2% of its GDP every year. Like Vietnam was 2.3%. You know, and in some ways, the credit has allowed us to pay that money without being involved in the war. You know, ever since the War of Independence, America has levied a war tax. You know, taxes have gone up to fund wars, but in this case, they haven't. And the danger is, it's not that, you know, these are all questions that you ask that are important questions to be answered by this country. But this country needs to re-engage in an open-minded way rather than just say, well, you know what, I don't want my breakfast spoiled today because I feel bad that there's war in Afghanistan. You know, if you look at, I'm a liberal reporter, and if you look at the figures, Human Rights Watch figures are that since NATO and U.S. invaded in 2001, 16,000 civilians have died. Now, it's probably 17,000 now. That's a terrible figure. 17,000 people have been killed because of U.S. forces or Taliban forces since the war in 2001. But that's nothing compared to the 400,000 civilians that died a decade earlier under the Taliban and the warlords during that civil war. Now, America doesn't have a responsibility to step in and save Afghanistan from killing its own people. But if we are going to pull out, let's pull out for the right reasons. Let's not kid ourselves we're pulling out of Afghanistan because we're killing civilians out there. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, let's really focus on what we're doing and why we're there and have that conversation and not try to kind of, you know, let's just be honest about it.
Tim Hetherington is co-director of the documentary film Restrepo, which will be opening tonight at 7 o'clock at the Lensic, and then it will be at Regal Cinema starting next week. And Captain Dan Kearney, who appears in the film, is here. They'll both be at the Lensic tonight, answering questions and talking after the screening. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks a lot.
No, thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and Rob DeWalt is on deck. He'll be with us in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasa Tiempo Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning. Hey, I wanted to say congratulations on winning Best of Radio Show,
Santa Fe Reporter. Thank you. And
you should be very proud.
Oprah
should know about this.
numbers 1 and 2 were me and KSFR News.
That's right. Almost a clean sweep.
Let's speak about the arts. What's happening this weekend and beyond?
All kinds of junk and
stuff.
Besides Restrepo tonight. I watched the screener last night.
What'd you think?
It blew my mind.
I thought it was really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Everybody should see it. I don't really usually read reviews when I read books or watch films because I just want to you know, sort of do the St. John's method and take the text that it's purely and not be influenced. But I did end up reading the New York Times review, and it basically said at the end something like, I don't mean to lecture, but everybody should take 90 minutes out of their day to see this and to see what, you know, what you're paying for and what this war is. And it does give, I mean, one of the things before we went on the air, this Captain Dan Kearney, who we were talking to, said, when we watched the film, we felt like you made it for us.
Yeah.
Not for any public, not for anybody else, just for us, meaning the soldiers, which I thought was profound.
No, I felt the same way. I didn't feel like it was created to sway public opinion. It was created just to basically tell the story.
Yeah. And it's not, and what it does so well is it's not political, but whatever conversation you want and need to get into about politics, it gives you real substantial material to talk about.
Right, especially now.
Yeah.
All kinds of great stuff going on today. Let's see. Well, there's tons of openings. First off, at Gerald Peters Gallery, there's Under Western Skies, a group show with a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. That's up through October 17th. Gosh, what else? Lou Allen Gallery's at the Rail Yard is having an opening. Enduring Terrain, Paintings and Monotypes by John Fincher. And there's a reception from 5:30 to 7:30 tonight. And that's up through September 5th. God, there's so many openings. If I read them all, we run out of time to do anything else.
Well, there's a lot of openings, including Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary from 10 to 4 tomorrow down on Route 14 on the Turquoise Trail.
Route? Is it a route or a highway?
Highway 14?
Yeah, I think it's a highway.
Highway 14.
What's the difference?
I don't know. Route, that's one of those...
Roots grow in the ground and highways are things you drive on.
Terms from my childhood, everything was Route 44.
Oh, yeah?
Route 60. Well, Route 66 we have out here. I don't know. Anyway, it's on Highway 14.
Also on Friday, three fabulous guitarists, Daniel Western, Stuart Green, and Roberto, I hope it's pronounced Capocchi.
Who was on the show earlier this week.
He was, yes. That's 7 p.m. Tonight at O'Shaughnessy Performance Space over at the College of Santa Fe, which will have apparently a new name at the end of August.
Yeah, the College of Santa Fe, that's right,
University
of Santa Fe?
Design and Art and something.
Right, Santa Fe University of Art and Design.
That's way too much of a handful. But there's a story in today's Passatiempo by Moi.
The acronym would be SWAD.
SWAD?
S-F-U-A-D. SWAD.
If you would get from tickets for that, you can call 575-737-0276.
Or just show up.
Yeah, you can just show up. There's I won't talk about prices, but there's three sort of ticket levels. So it's, you know.
Hey, a poet conspiracy, the poet conspiracy at Chato Contemporary Art presents a poetry reading by Debbie Brody tonight at 6:30. Chato Contemporary Art is at 112 West San Francisco, Suite 203.
Sweet. Jazz in the Hall on Saturday. Santa Fe Art Institute series continues with guitarist Joshua Breakstone, who joins John Fredocosta and the Straight Up Jazz Ensemble at 7 p.m. in Tipton Hall, also at the College of Santa Fe. You can call 428-1527 to dig ticket prices for that. Also, that night on Saturday, Miniature Tigers is playing over at the Santa Fe Brewing Company. Awesome indie rocks from, I think they're in Brooklyn now, but they hail from Phoenix. So go out and give them some support if you want. Tickets are available at the Lensic, 988-1234.
Most excellent.
Yeah.
And then, let's see. Today, from 5 to 8, the New Mexico Museum of Art is serving free root beer floats, or brown cows, as they are sometimes known. It's part of the exhibition Soulmates, S-O-L-E, Soulmates, Cowboy Boots, and Art. They invited me to scoop ice cream, but I didn't see that until just now. Anyway, that's tonight.
You'll get carpal cone tunnel syndrome if you do that too long.
I can't go, sorry. Sorry, Helen.
But I'm sure you could just, you know, scoop one, eat one, scoop one, eat one.
Yeah, that's true, but brown cows, man.
Yeah. On Saturday, also speaking of poetry, Venus in the Badlands 2, a tribute to Todd Moore, who passed away, I believe, in March of this year. He wrote a great series called Dillinger, and he's kind of an outlaw poet. And they're going to have a tribute to him Saturday night at 7 p.m. at Gerald Peters Gallery. If you want more information, you can call 954-5757. I understand there's going to be a bunch of his books available also. In the bookstore. Go to the bookstore. Don't just wander around the gallery. Well, you could, but if you want to go to this event, go to the bookstore. What else? Oh, this is the final week for Grito Flamenco. The season finale is on Sunday, but I believe there are performances on Friday and Saturday at 8:30 also. It's happening at El Farol. The National Institute of Flamenco is presenting it. It's the basically it's a summer cabaret series. There's a review of it in today's Pasta Tiempo, but this is the last weekend to catch it. So go check it out.
And Pax Christi has their annual event, the Hiroshima Commemoration, and that is today and tomorrow. So tonight at El Museo Cultural in Santa Fe, Bishop Gabino Zavala, who's president of Pax Christi USA, will speak about nuclear abolition. There's a suggested donation. And then tomorrow, from 9 until noon, there will be a nonviolence training at Santa Maria de la Paz here in Santa Fe, down near the Santa Fe Community College. Lots more stuff. If you have any questions, you can call Bud at 505-264-2838.
Call Bud.
Bud.
Call Bud. He'll hook you up.
Call Bud.
Books at the Market. Collected Works Bookstore presents. I didn't get a chance to write about this in my food column this week, but I wanted to make sure it got mentioned. Collected Works Bookstore presents author Sherry Brooks Vinton signing copies of Put 'Em Up, a comprehensive home preserving guide for the creative cook. At tonight, you don't even really have to be creative, but it's 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday at the Santa Fe Farmers Market. There's of course, no charge unless you want to buy the book, but it's a great book on preserving, which I think a lot of people are going to do this year because everyone's, except for Chile, is having bumper crops of fruit on their trees, everyone I talked to. So.
Hey, I just got a correction that the Poet Conspiracy at the Chateau Gallery is tonight at 6:30.
At 6:30.
I don't know if I read 7 or 7:30, whatever the previous email said, but anyway, apparently it is at 6:30.
Somebody out there is on top of it. Hey, tonight at the Santa Fe Complex on Agua Fria Street is Retrieving Humanity, an international multimedia installation.
Retrieving Humanity?
Retrieving Humanity.
Are they going to have golden retrievers?
No, it's because that would be Retrieving Caninity.
No, it would be Retrieving Prairie Dogs.
Okay. But anyway, there's a story in today's Pasta Tiempo, but it's really interesting what they did. Is they set up all these sort of interactive video kiosks that allow you to speak to people through, I believe, Skype and maybe another service. Throughout the world, and it should be really interesting. And it's a one day only thing.
Wait, you're gonna set up on Skype and talk to random people around the world?
Yeah, pretty much. But you should have to read the story in the Pasta Table today. It's really interesting. Casey Sanchez, who wrote the piece on Restrepo, also wrote a piece on this.
Nice.
And also tonight, Victoria Price Art and Design is having an opening. We are here so lightly. Mixed media work by Alexander Eldridge. There's a reception from 5 to 7 p.m.
And Green River Pottery has their anniversary. Did you read that already?
Nope.
No, it has their anniversary celebration and sale today from 5 to 7. And they've moved from their Chimayo location right here into town. So you can go to Green River Pottery at 1710 Lena Street here in Santa Fe. And I'm looking at the pictures, and they're quite beautiful pottery.
I believe Saturday is the opening night of Britain's Albert Herring at the Santa Fe Opera.
I'm going.
You are?
Yeah. You know what the story of that is?
You know, I do, sort of.
It's adorable. It's hilarious. So basically the kind of, what would you call them, kind of semi-aristocratic town elders are getting ready for their May Day celebration.
Yes.
And they need a May Queen. And so they're talking about which virtuous young teenage girl could be the May Queen. Well, so-and-so was seen kissing the postman, and so-and-so was seen sneaking off with the butcher's son, and so on. And basically, no girl is virtuous enough to be the May Queen. So they get a May King. They decide they're going to have a May King, who's a greengrocer named Albert Herring.
Yeah.
And Albert Herring doesn't want to have anything to do with them, but they're offering a big reward, so his mother says he has to do it. And merriment ensues.
Merriment ensues. There's a great package of stories by James Keller in today's Pasta Tiempo, and there's also, I believe, Robert Knott has a story.
James Keller is really great.
He's fantastic. I'm so glad he's with us.
I know.
He even does a story on the set, about the set of Albert Herring, and the funky packages and things from England during the period, and how they made these cakes, these styrofoam cakes that look really good enough to eat.
Cake-like.
Mm-hmm. Very cake-ish. But that opening is Saturday, and I wish I could go, but I have too much on my plate.
Yeah, we'll go another time. It's playing all through August.
I know. I'll have to get. That's the, if I was going to go and see one this year.
Benjamin
that's
Britten.
That's what I would see.
Yeah, no, yeah. This will be the last of the. I will have seen all the five operas this year. They are making me into an opera fan.
Uh-oh.
Against my, well, it was against my will. Now it isn't, but it's they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And
no, this is a great season too.
I know. Life is a Dream.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm actually, ladies and gentlemen, going to rerun the opera series next week because next week they're playing every opera. So
yeah.
I'm going to play the show that corresponds to the opera that's being performed that night.
Oh, sweet.
And I'll probably play the Lewis Spratlin interview for Life is a Dream instead of the show that we recorded because now that we have him on tape, it was a very interesting conversation, I thought, that we had. And then the following week, I'm going to have a four-part series on climate change.
Four-part series on climate change.
Yeah,
oh,
Monday,
cool.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Not next week, but the week after.
Neato.
Yep.
We have guests and things and people.
No, I'm going to talk about it myself for 4 days. Yeah, so we're going to have guests.
I don't think
things.
Anybody would mind that.
You would when I was done with you.
You know what? Speaking of theater.
Theater.
On a Saturday night, Glamazon, Attack of the 50-Foot Drag Queen.
Nice.
Fairy Dust Entertainment presents Victoria Vale and the Queens of Drag at 9 p.m. on Saturday. It's a dance party with DJ TNT, follows the drag performance. That's at the Silver Starlight Lounge out at Rainbow Vision on Rodeo Road. You can chat up 428-7781 if you want more info on the Attack of the 50-Foot Drag Queen.
Wonderful. And let's see.
And most drag queens are 50 feet once they get the heels on.
50 feet?
Yeah.
Not just 2 feet?
Now, everything's exaggerated.
One heel on each foot?
It feels like 50 feet.
Want to dance salsa? Vibes Latin, the only salsa party in town tonight at El Patio Cafe at 9 o'clock. Food, beer, wine, 18 and up. And that's at 1805 Second Street, so that's the location of the former Cloud Cliff. And that is great fun. You can go to mamboroomonline.com for more information.
There are four or five openings at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts on downtown on Cathedral Place on Monday, the 2nd. There is Oblique Drift, mixed media work by Nicholas, I hope I'm saying this right, Galanin. Dry Ice, Native Alaska Artists and Landscapes, which is a group show. Round Up, which is video work by Tony Mendoza. Mattering, site-specific installation by Rose Simpson. Apaches and Angels, site-specific work by Douglas Miles and Brendan Moore. The receptions are Thursday, August 19th, but the show opens on Monday the 2nd. And there is a reception for another show on the 18th called Wasn't the Dream of the Golden Cities. It Wasn't the Dream of the Golden Cities, which is an installation by the Post Commodity Collective members. All of these exhibits are up through January 2nd, so you have plenty of time to see them. There's a story in today's Pasatiempo.
Most excellent. And on a completely different note, Richard McCombs of St. John's College is giving a lecture titled Kierkegaard and the Buddha on Religious Diversity at the Junior Common Room at Peterson Student Center on Wednesday, the 4th of August at 3 in the afternoon. It's free of charge, open to the public, and followed by a Q&A.
Did we talk about Creativity for Pieces event that's happening?
No, please do. This is the first year for ages that I haven't been able to get them on the air. We just couldn't schedule it, and they're fantastic. Please,
they're crazy busy. This has been going on since 2003. They had this camp, and it's out in Glorieta. Out where I live. And what they do is they gather 20, well, it depends. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less. But they gather young Palestinian and Israeli women, and they bring them together to this three-week camp, and they do all
teenagers.
Kinds of neat activities. Well, they're like 13 to 15 to 20 years
yeah.
old or something like that. So they spend 3 weeks together. They do sort of these collaborative exercises, art exercises. They go on field trips. They went to the Mountain Center yesterday or a couple of
nice.
Days ago. And then after the 3 weeks, they take what they've learned and they go back to their communities in the settlements there, and try and sort of spread a little bit of what they learned here about cooperation. And they do it in their families and their communities, and they continue to have meetings in their settlements throughout the year. And they have leadership programs that are drawn off of the camp. Well, before they take off, they always do a reading here. And so at 7 p.m. on Tuesday the 3rd, they're doing the reading at James A. Little Theater at the New Mexico School for the Deaf. Tickets are available at the door only. I know this, but it's not in this listing. You can't use a credit card.
Oh, okay.
So bring cash or bring a check and some ID. And you can call 505-757-6752. They have a social worker that works with these kids during the collaborative process and during the writing process. So, and a lot of them have some really heart-wrenching stories to tell.
Indeed, they do.
But it's a really popular event. Most of what helps Creativity for Peace operate is private donations, not corporate donations. So it's a great program. You guys
it's
should go and
support program,
it.
Wonderful program, and it's been going on for years. And I swear, when some of those girls become elected the president of their various countries and people, world peace will reign supreme.
Yep, definitely. Voices from the Past is happening on Monday the 2nd. Spanish Water Rights and Bounty of the Common Lands. Change, Continuity, and Clashing Legal Regimes in New Mexico History. It's a lecture by the Associate Curator of Ethnohistory at the Arizona State Museum. And he's also the University of Arizona Associate History Professor. It's part of the Southwest Seminars Lecture Series marking the Santa Fe's 400th. That's at 6 p.m. at Hotel Santa Fe on Monday the 2nd.
The Tubton Norbu Ling Buddhist Center is offering a new course starting this coming Sunday, the 1st of August, from 9 in the morning till 11:30 in the morning for 5 weeks. It's called Heart Advice for Death and Dying, taught by Don Hendrick, and it's designed to provide an understanding of death and dying and offer practical instructions from the point of view of Tibetan Buddhism. There's meditations that precede each class, starting at 8 in the morning. For more information, you can call 505-660-7056, and that's at 1807 2nd Street, Suite 35, across from Back Road Pizza.
The Santa Fe Desert Corral Summer Festival continues. There's all kinds of events, but the one that I want to mention is on Tuesday the 3rd. It's Song of Songs at 8 p.m. at Cathedral Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi. If you call 988, all these tickets for the Desert Corral are available at the Lenzic. But that show is going to be great, just not only because of the music, but because of the venue, I think.
Yeah, I went to the Romantic Guitar Desert
How was
Corral.
That?
It was beautiful.
Good.
They are so, I mean, the Desert Corral, the singers are so good, and that one is playing, the Desert Corral program is two more times August 5th and 10th.
Yeah, 10th.
Which is, I guess, a Thursday and the following Tuesday. So that's coming up as well. But all their programs are fantastic. But that's the one that I've seen so far. And the singers are, every single one of them is soloist quality, but they are trained to sing so that they can just blend and they're one sound. Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. Yeah. The Romantic Guitar, what they did, there's a bunch of pieces in it, but one of them they set... there's a setting of Walt Whitman's Civil War poems to music with guitar. Beautiful. And then some Lorca poems at the end.
Yeah, some Lorca poems, yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, I literally sat there crying. I mean, sitting next to somebody I didn't know, trying not to sniff.
Well, that means it moved you.
It was moving. It really was. Here's another opening, Under Western Skies. And that's at the Gerald Peters Gallery. Kenneth Bunn, Arturo Chavez, John Encinas, Walter Mattia, Matt Smith, and Bart Walker. This is going through the 17th of October, and it's all kinds of Western art and sculpture.
There's a listing here. I was asked to mention this. Thursday the 5th at the Santa Fe Public Library Main Branch, that would be downtown on Washington Avenue, the Margaret Fuller Bicentennial Celebration. Michael Barnett discusses the journalist, women's rights advocate's legacy at 7 p.m., and that's in the community room there at the library. And there's no charge for that.
Excellent. And on Saturday night, come party with Shona Slovakia That is 7:30 to 10:30 at the Second Street Brewery. Great music, great beer, great food. And what do you know anything about this group, Shona Slovakia?
I don't know anything.
Oh, well.
Especially about that.
You don't know anything about anything?
Yeah.
Yes, you do. You're a fount of knowledge in almost every area.
Especially heavy metal, which is what I want to talk about.
Now we're talking.
This is the weekend for heavy metal. Doesn't matter if you're an older person or a kid. At Core Zone at 9 p.m. on Friday the 30th, great local band Green Guy is hitting the Core Zone stage, as is a band called As In We, and an Albuquerque blues rock, sort of blues rock metal band called Supergiant. And that's at 9 p.m. on Friday at Corazon. For those under 21, you don't even have to be under. This is an all-ages event, which I wish more people would get.
I wish there were more all-ages events in this town.
You know, I gotta give Corazon props. They're doing a lot more all-ages stuff. A lot of metal, but, you know, the kids love it. And so they're making a concerted effort to do more all-ages shows. So I want to make sure everybody knows that. But Warehouse 21... is an all-ages venue, and it's called the Teen Arts Warehouse or something like that. That's the name that the city provides or whatever, but it's for all ages.
It is.
And Saturday, July 31st at 8 p.m., Everything I Am, Torn Between Worlds, and Full Terrests are going to be playing at, this is a small cover, but if you call 989-4423, go to warehouse21.org, you can get more information on that.
You know, I'm looking at the Shona Slovakia poster, which finally came up on my email, and it says Afro Gypsy Fusion, and I'm seeing stringed instruments, am I seeing a marimba, electric guitar, an accordion, all kinds of good stuff.
Oh my gosh, is that guy wearing a beanie?
He's wearing a baseball cap with a dark brim.
Okay.
It's not a beanie.
All right.
Not to worry.
That would be cool if it was a beanie, though. I'm fine with that.
A propeller beanie.
Hey, the Girls Inc. 38th Annual Arts and Crafts Show that's happening on August 6th and 8th, 6th through 8th, could probably use some more volunteers. If you want to volunteer for that, it's a big fundraiser for Girls Inc. Call 982-2042 for information and positions and shifts and all that good stuff.
And the Latino Producers Academy with the National Association of Latino Independent Producers is happening at the CCA, and there's all kinds of stuff that we will be talking about that in the future, but it's time to go now. Rob DeWalt has been with us speaking of the arts. He is with the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Thank you so much for coming in, and we'll be seeing more of you in the coming weeks and months.
In the coming weeks. You'll see me next week, definitely.
Yay. No, you won't see me next week because we're doing opera series next week.
But that's right.
Anyway, thanks for being with us. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to the fabulous Dot Foil Computer Services, to whom I'm going to bring my computer later. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Rob DeWalt, have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Don't work too hard.
Oh, that's a problem. I'm going to take tomorrow kind of off.
Good. Good. I'm going to garden tomorrow. And then
garden? Yeah. You can come do my garden.
Okay.
Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Jazz a la Carta with Ricardo Perez and Helga Ancona. Hasta la vista.
Hasta la vista.
Adios.